You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, there's a lot going on. Michelle Bachmann is leaving. I will give you some thoughts on that. I think this is actually bad news for Democrats because she was going to be so easy to beat, which is probably why she's leaving. But that's a anyhow, we'll get into that in a little bit. The governor of Texas has vetoed a bill that would require nonprofits to be transparent in their operations. Why? Because of the IRS scandal. Oh, yes. In our second hour, Jamie Weinstein is going to stop by, and we are going to be debating that issue. He's with the Daily Caller. Translating Michelle Bachmann, Amanda Marcotte has a great piece today over at Raw Story. And particularly interesting, George Zimmerman's lawyer is going on national television to basically trash Trayvon Martin. And it seems to me that this is called polluting the jury pool. I don't know if that's a legal term or not, but somewhere along the line I picked it up. And I wanted to check in with somebody who knows about this kind of stuff. Debbie Hines writes over at LegalSpeaks.com. She's a trial lawyer, former prosecutor, and legal and political commentator. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. You wrote a nice piece, Trayvon Martin trial, a case of what ifs here. Give us a snapshot of what's going on with the Trayvon Martin case.
Well, yeah, this turned out to be such a very interesting case. What is going on right now is the judge has slam dunked the defense by telling them that all the erroneous evidence that they would like to get in and say in opening statement to make it seem as if Trayvon Martin is really the bad person, that they're not going to be allowed to do it. So that's first off what the judge has stopped them from doing as of the hearing as of yesterday.
Okay, so that hurts the defense?
That hurts the defense big time.
Of George Zimmerman.
Now, I guess, right. Going on their national tour.
Right, okay. So because they can't say this stuff to the jury is not sequestered. The jury is going to be made up of people who are sitting at home right now watching TV, so they're running around saying it on TV.
Well, yeah, and everybody's heard about the case. I mean, I think you'd have to be living, you know, underground to not have heard about the case, but that's not really what the jurors are being held to the standard. They're basically being held to just being able to make a decision, a fair and impartial decision, based on what they hear inside that courtroom.
Right. But you and I both know, I think, I mean, maybe you have more faith in the ability of the average person to set aside what they've learned outside of a courtroom. I mean, you have the experience. I don't, frankly. Is it possible? Let me phrase this as a question. Is it possible for somebody who has seen, you know, Zimmerman's lawyer on TV, or who has seen prejudicial evidence paraded on TV as if it was news, perhaps uncritically, to walk into a courtroom and say, okay, I'm going to pretend that I don't know all that. I'm going to have amnesia about that?
Well, the jurors did it in the Casey Anthony trial, and they did it in the O.J. Simpson trial. So, and even in any high-profile case, yes, it can be done.
Okay, so you have confidence and faith in the system that this can be. So, which is encouraging. Thank you for that. What do you think, why then, if that's the case, why then is George Zimmerman's legal team running around pouring this stuff out? Are they trying to win in the court of public opinion in order to maybe raise more money for it?
They really need to win. There is no DNA of Trayvon Martin on the gun. The evidence really is not, as I see it, and I've been on both sides. I've been a prosecutor for 5 years, a former prosecutor, and then I've also done criminal defense. I just think that the evidence is more slanted towards the prosecution at this point.
Right.
We haven't seen what will actually be the evidence. So what they're doing is what they've been doing all along since he was arrested a year ago, is they're just going on a national platform. They've got the website. They've got two websites going. That's what they're basically trying to do. They're basically trying to muddy the waters.
Now, I remember sometime back there were news reports about George Zimmerman's wife getting over $100,000, as I recall, via their website. In fact, she got kind of busted for that, she and George, I guess. And is that what they're trying to do? Are they trying to crank up sympathy so that more people will go to their website and give them money?
That, too. I mean, this is one of the most polarized cases that there's been. I mean, you've got the Trayvon Martin family on one side, you've got the Zimmerman family, and I coincidentally was even contacted online by Robert Zimmerman, who wanted me to make a nice statement about his brother George from an article that he sent me. So, yeah, they're just trying all different routes. And really, you know, if I'm on their side, I wouldn't see anything wrong with it.
I see. And so this is just, you know, kind of the way that we do this kind of thing in America with these high-profile cases.
Unfortunately. I mean, it's come to that with the social media and online. I mean, there's no way people would not have heard about this any more than no one would have never heard of Casey Anthony.
Right.
That's just where we're at. Is it right? I don't think so, and I really think the judge should have granted a gag order against the attorneys, at least.
Well, now, which raises an interesting question. A few years back, I was talking with a Canadian reporter who told me that in Canada, and I don't know if this is law or if it's simply the policy of the press, but basically they don't name a defendant until after a conviction in the media, generally in Canada. And, I mean, that's a big step from a gag order. But why not at least a gag? I mean, obviously we're not going to change American jurisprudence and law and the free press here. But why not a gag order? Why not say, you know, let's button this thing down until a jury's had an opportunity to look at it?
The one thing I thought the judge did not rule correctly on, although I'm not a judge. I mean, I think there have been several requests by the prosecution for a gag order. And I just think at some point in time, I mean, it's probably too late right now, but I think at some point in time early on that she should have invoked the gag order against both sides, because everyone that's listening to the case, potential jurors, they're thinking that they know which way the case is going to go. And most of the things that have been said, even some of the things on the prosecution side, is not even going to probably ever get into evidence.
Right. Now, just for the record, when is this trial going to happen? When is it probably going to resolve itself? Has a jury been impaneled? If not, when will that happen?
Right.
And where are we at?
June 10th is to start, and June 10th is they're going to bring in a ton of people to be looked at for jurors, to be voir dired for jurors is the word we use. And the trial is expected to go 3 weeks. I don't think it would go longer. It's going to take a while for them to get, as you say, the fair and impartial jurors, for them to actually get the 12 persons plus the alternates. That could definitely take days, to really be quite honest.
Now, if just an opinion kind of question.
Okay.
We're looking for fair and impartial jurors. And I remember in some of these other high-profile cases, you know, all the conversation about that and people being asked, you know, have you been watching the media, and people actually saying, no, I haven't. And I just wonder, is it possible to get a fair and impartial jury, that is a jury that hasn't been paying attention to the media, that has an IQ above room temperature? I mean, it seems like anybody who would have any interest in current events would, you know, be the kind of person that you actually would want on your jury, and yet would be exposed to those polluting influences.
But that's not what fair and impartial means. I mean, fair and impartial does not mean that they haven't heard anything about the case.
I see.
And that's what everybody thinks. It means, oh, you haven't heard anything. They could have heard everything, but it just means that, can you put what you've heard aside and just make your verdict be based solely on the evidence that you hear in this courtroom?
Now, does that have to do with the question, have you yet formed an opinion, or could it be that somebody's could say, yes, I formed an opinion, but I'm certainly willing to change it based on the evidence?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
That's how jurors are voir dired, and that's how the judge speaks to jurors. That's how the defense and the prosecution will be able to, you know, give a lot of questions individually with just the judge and the attorneys present to actually get to that point. Or is there anything that there's no way that you can give a fair and impartial decision?
Is this going to be one of those cases where they bring in jury experts and they, like, read their faces and all that kind of stuff, listen to, you know, do NLP stuff?
I think if the Zimmerman defense has the money to do it, absolutely. I definitely think that they need to do that.
Yeah, the old jury consultant. Does that help?
I think it helps. I mean, the more you know about a juror, because you aren't given that much on the juror questionnaire. I mean, you basically have their name, their address, their occupation, their age. You're going to be able to ask them questions based on the voir dire process. But the more information you can get about anyone, the more you can make an informed decision.
Probably on both sides.
That you want sitting and judging.
Debbie Hines. You can read about it at LegalSpeaks.com. Hang on a second, Debbie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sorry, that guy always steps on me. Debbie Hines, trial lawyer and former prosecutor. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Hey, by the way, this Saturday, this weekend, June 1st, Progressive Democrats of America is going to host an annual get-together and fundraiser featuring special guests and speakers, which includes me, Lily Tomlin, John Nichols, Jim Hightower, along with some other very special guests. If you're in the L.A. area and you'd like to join us, This is a small event. The maximum of 50 people are being invited. It's going to be in a private home in Beverly Hills. If you'd like to join us, go to pdamerica.org. There's still a few seats left, just a very few. Go to pdamerica.org, click the events tab for tickets and info, or click the link at tomhartman.com. And if you can't attend, show your support with a donation and help PDA pave the way to 2014. That's over at pdamerica.org. So a bunch of us are doing this. I'm on the advisory board. Medea Benjamin's on the Code Pink is on the advisory board. Jim Hightower's on the advisory. Well, there's a bunch of us who really think this is a great organization. So that's the Trayvon Martin case. That's interesting. We'll see where this goes. In 12 states now, officially, the gun homicide rate, the gun death rate, the homicide and suicide rate, has exceeded that of automobiles. This story isn't being told. Every day in America, some little kid gets killed by accident someplace. That story's not being told. It's like, you know, we're sliding back into sleep again on gun violence in the United States. I find that very sad. And then Michelle Bachmann, I find this really interesting. Michelle Bachmann came out today and said she is not going to be running for re-election. This has nothing to do with gay marriage being legalized in the state of Minnesota a couple of weeks ago. And because her husband's business is all about helping gay men live a straight life with prayer or something. I don't, you know, whatever you call that. And but I don't, you know, she didn't bring that topic up, so we'll just leave that. But she says, my good friend Amanda Marcotte over at Raw Story has a translation of Michelle Bachmann's resignation speech that's hysterical. It's worth reading. She said, Michelle Bachmann says, my good friends, after a great deal of thought and deliberation, I've decided next year I will not seek a fifth congressional term. After serious consideration, I'm confident this is the right decision. Amanda says, no, what she's really saying is after reading my poll numbers, that she's in the toilet. I mean, not literally, but you know what I mean. And she's in the dumpster. And having to, no, that's a bad metaphor, too. She's not doing well in the polls. And having to endure multiple interviews with the FBI, I've decided that this job actually requires work, so I'm quitting. Hey, she's following Sarah Palin's lead. Except she's actually quitting at the end of her term. Sarah Palin didn't do that, so maybe she's not. Anyhow, she says, however, the law limits anyone from serving as president for more than 8 years. In my opinion, 8 years is enough. She's served for 8 years. She says, so Amanda says, what she's actually saying is to make myself feel better about leaving a disgrace, I'm going to pretend Congress is a club I don't want to be in anyway. Starting by disparaging those who managed to hang on longer than I did. Good one, Amanda. Be assured, Michelle Bachmann says, my decision was not in any way influenced by any concerns about being reelected. I've always defeated candidates. And rest assured, this has nothing to do with recent inquiries into the activities of my former presidential campaign. Right. And Amanda points out, if you're dumb enough to believe that somebody who ran for president is no longer interested in being in elected office. Yeah. She says, Amanda says that what Michelle is really saying is, I'm hoping that my reputation for being crazy will convince you that I'm indifferent to the relentless phone calls I'm getting from the Republican Party leaders begging me to step down so as not to lose an otherwise secure seat to a Democrat. And that brings us, Amanda's piece goes on, and there's much more humor in it, and you know, it's, and actually Michelle Bachmann's speech as well. But this is where I think that this is a bad thing for the Democratic Party. It seems to me that maybe the Karl Rove faction in the Republican Party that is saying enough with the crazy already. You know, we keep putting these crazy candidates up, and whether they're talking about legitimate rape or Second Amendment remedies or whatever, they don't win. They're losing to Democrats, and in some cases they're losing to progressive Democrats. In some cases they're losing to third way corporate Democrats, but they're losing. And just because the Tea Partiers want them doesn't mean that they can win an election. I mean, when Congress opened this last section of Congress, the first piece of legislation that was dropped, which ultimately got voted on, was Michelle Bachmann's. And it was the 37th attempt to repeal Obamacare. The American people you know, when you ask them about the policies associated with Obamacare, do you like the fact that you can't be knocked off your insurance anymore for pre-existing conditions? Yeah, I like that. Do you like the fact that you can, you know, keep your kids on until they're 24 or 26, whatever it is, 26, I think it is. Yeah, I like that. Do you like the fact that you can buy it at a cheaper price on a, on an exchange where everybody has to publish their prices and you can compare side by side? You can't do that right now. So, yeah, I like that. I mean, you call five insurance companies right now, and they'll each quote you a price on a plan that is completely different from every other insurance company's plans. You would have to be a spreadsheet genius to compare health insurance plans. So, you know, people are kind of pleased about that. Do you think it's a good idea that everybody's going to be insured, or pretty much everybody in the United States? Yes, I like that. But let's repeal it anyway, say the Republicans. And they're riding this train to defeat. And the problem with Michelle Bachmann resigning, this is why I'm not happy that she's resigning. A, she's a great sideshow. But B, she was going to lose the next election. I mean, all the polling in Minnesota shows very clearly that she was going to lose the next election. Even when she's running against, like, unnamed Democrats, she's going to lose the next election. So what's she going to do now? I would bet she will go to the old age home for retired wackadoodle Republicans, a.k.a. Fox so-called News. Right? Just as Sarah Palin did, just as Karl Rove has, just as, you know, on and on the list goes. So, in fact, she might have already cut a deal. Who knows? I'll bet Roger Ailes was right there going, hey, your base is our viewers, and they want to hear from you, and here's $1 million a year, and Michelle Bachmann's looking at her congressional salary of $167,000 and going, $1 million a year at Fox News? I could do that. We'll see. We'll see.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That's only the beginning. There's a number of other very interesting things going on in the news today, which we'll be getting to shortly. Okay, from one to another, welcome back to the place where we dare ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. No, only a conservative would believe Walmart is a person. Barbo in Dallas, Texas, do you believe Walmart's a person?
Well, no, it's a corporation, but I think of all the millions of people Walmart gives a job to, furnishes insurance for. So I'm not as against Walmart.
Oh, wait a minute. All the millions of people that Walmart is using to make money with?
Walmart is hiring. Walmart, how many people own homes and cars because they work at home at Walmart?
Yeah, it's a fine thing, but, you know, they could pay a little more. And they could still be profitable.
Like, you have the five
heirs of the Walmart fortune, just those five people. They have more wealth than the bottom third of all of America.
Well,
they could pay
fine.
A little more.
Their daddy worked hard for it. That's fine. That's their money. They made it.
No, that's the money they took.
Took from who?
From the people who are working at Walmart. I'm of the opinion that if you are going to run a business in America and you're going to pay so little that many, if not most, of your employees have to go on food stamps and other government subsidies so that you, Barbo, and me, with our tax dollars, are subsidizing the Walmart workers, then you have no right to be doing business in this country.
That's an absolute lie.
Well, it's a lie that Walmart workers qualify for food stamps? That's not a lie.
No, that the majority of them are on food stamps. That's an absolute lie.
Well, it may not be more than 50%, but it's a substantial minority if not. It's hundreds of thousands of people.
Walmart, get another job.
Well, good luck on that in an economy where all the jobs have been offshored.
You know, let me tell you, I didn't call to be confrontational.
Well,
I'm a conservative.
Feel free.
I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative.
Okay.
I believe that you take care of yourself, that the government does.
So you're selfish.
Has no responsibility to take care of you. I'm a retired doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Navy veteran, retired doctor, and this country is a wonderful country. If people would just button up their own bootstraps and take care of themselves and not try to depend on somebody.
How long were you in the Navy?
Hard work. I was in the Navy during the Korean War.
Okay, so you were in the most socialist organization in the United States, where they provide you with housing, food, medical care, even your clothing. And that's a bad thing?
I don't care whether it's, that's not a very substantial argument. All services take care of their people.
Well, the people who are the most happy with their health care in the United States are the people who get TRICARE, the people who are, you know, retired military who qualify for.
I disagree with you.
I'm talking about you. Look at the public opinion surveys. These are the people who are happiest with their medical services.
Let me tell you.
And that's socialist medicine.
If that awful Obamacare comes into effect, which
it's already in effect.
I hope and pray that it gets torn down, pulled apart, because most of the hospitals don't want it. Most of the physicians don't want it.
And not true.
I certainly wouldn't want it. That is true.
No, it's simply not. It's, you know, the hospitals are doing just fine. Most you survey most doctors, they're either ambivalent about it or in favor of it. One of my kids is working at a clinic out in Oregon that wouldn't even exist without Obamacare, and they're seeing hundreds of low income, you know, poor people, uninsured poor people every day. It's one of the 10,000 clinics that came out of Obamacare, and those people would not be getting health services, and in fact they'd be ending up in ERs instead, because, you know, now they're getting preventative care. How is that not a good thing? Ronald Reagan required ERs to take our tax dollars and treat people, at $500 to $1,000 a whack for somebody with some kind of a disease that could have been prevented with a $30 doctor visit.
Have you read Obamacare?
You mean, have I read the 3,000 pages of the rules and regulations and the law? No. Have you?
Well, I have. I bought it. I called the United States Printing Office. I bought it. Sent them a check. Well, yeah. Give my credit card, and I have it. It's taken me a long time.
I can imagine.
I cherry-picked it, but I've gone through it.
So what about it don't you like?
I don't like because it's socialized medicine.
No, it's not. TRICARE is socialized medicine. The VA is socialized medicine. Socialized medicine is where the government owns the doctors. They hire the doctors directly, and they own the hospitals. In Obamacare, the hospitals are still privately owned, and the doctors are still independent contractors, and the government is not hiring anybody other than a few bureaucrats to move money around to and from and through the health insurance companies, which are also being kept intact.
Well, why is it that when the worst president the United States has ever had, Obama, said it's only going to cost $900 million when it's well over $1 trillion that it's cost? $900 billion.
Obamacare is actually, according to the Congressional Budget Office this year, it has reduced our budget deficit by almost $100 billion. If you did away with Obamacare, if you did what Michelle Bachmann introduced into Congress this year and just canceled out all the parts of Obamacare, the federal budget deficit would go up by $100 billion, and you'd have a whole bunch of people who are getting services in the clinic where my daughter works who would no longer get those services. They'd have to go to the ER, and you and I would have to pay out of our tax dollars $500 to $1,000 for each one of those people instead of the $20 or $30 that it's costing to treat them in that clinic that my daughter works at. And that's why it's saving us money.
You evidently are a nice young man, have family, but I don't understand liberals, and I call them liberals. They use the word progressive because they don't want to use the word liberal.
I'm both.
The money is going to, you know, they love that until somebody else's money runs, other people's money runs out.
It's a nice slogan, but it doesn't make any sense. Can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Sure. Well, what's happened to, I've gone on mission trips to Cuba and worked in their hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
That's total. So it's the worst.
That's communism. That's not a system of governments, of economy or governance that I am supporting or favoring. They call it socialism. The Norwegians would not call it socialism. The Scandinavians, the Swedes, the Finns, the Danes, the Germans, the French, all the democratic socialist countries of Europe that are doing very well, thank you very much. Denmark was just, you know, voted internationally the happiest place in the world, and number two was Norway.
I've traveled all those countries.
Okay, those are all socialist countries. They call themselves democratic socialist countries. Cuba may call themselves socialist, but, you know, it's communism. It's the government owns the means of supply and distribution. There is no element of that in Obamacare. The only medical care system in the United States where the government owns the means of supply and distribution is the Veterans Administration. The government owns the VA hospitals. The government hires the VA doctors. But even with the Veterans Administration, they still buy drugs from private companies. They still buy machinery and equipment from private companies. There's no comparison between that and what's going on in Cuba.
Well, I've heard some of your friends that are on your side of the aisle talk about what a wonderful medical treatment there is in Cuba, and I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true.
Okay. I'll take your word for that. I've not been there,
really,
I don't know.
Not.
I think though, that if you're a little tiny country and you're operating under an embargo where you can't buy anything, you can't even buy a syringe from the United States, and you're making do, and you're actually getting a lifespan that's equal to the United States, and in some cases better, that you got to be doing something right.
Well, I don't know about the lifespan. I have not seen any figures on that, but they don't have trouble getting supplies from anywhere. They get supplies from Canada. One of their big, when I was there and been there twice, one of the countries they get a lot of things from is France and Italy.
Yeah.
They're not cut off from the Western world at all. But my problem, sir, with you is, and I just don't understand, you talk about all these people in need of care. We don't really have abject poverty in this country. Most people have a car, they have a house of some kind, they have a TV, they have air conditioning, they have a cell phone. There's really not abject poverty.
I would respectfully submit that you have never worked in the genuinely poor parts of this country for you to say that.
I have not. I've worked in poor parts of my state. I've given my services away many times, and there are poor, and there are people that are poor, need help. But we don't need to take care of people. From cradle to grave.
No, I'm not suggesting we should. What I'm suggesting is that if somebody wants to do business in America and make so much money off that business that five of those people are worth more than a third of America combined, that the very least they can do is pay a wage where their employees don't have to go on government assistance to have food for their kids.
Well, I'm not. You know about that, and I don't. It just seems impossible. One of the heirs to the... to the fortune lives in my city, and I don't know her, but I'm not jealous of anybody. But
I'm not jealous. I just think it's ill-gotten gains.
Oh no, it's not ill-gotten. They offer
sure
service. They offer. Why is it ill-gotten gains when
because,
people want to?
Because we have, you know, our economy has doubled in size. It's doubled in size since Ronald Reagan became president, and during that time that the economy has doubled in size, the wealth of the top 1% has more than tripled in size. The income of the top 1% has almost quintupled in size. The wages of the bottom 80% have actually gone down. Now, there's something fundamentally wrong with that, particularly given that the bottom 80% are the ones who spend virtually 100% of their income. They're the ones who keep the economy going. They're the real job creators. And they're the ones who pay their actual taxes. They pay 100% of their income as taxed for Social Security and Medicare. I mean, Robert Reich, the former labor secretary under Clinton, did the math. And he said that, you know, if the productivity increase, that doubling of productivity that we've seen in the last 32 years, was matched by the wage increase that we saw from the George Washington administration to the Reagan administration, the average family would not be making $44,500 a year right now. They'd be making $90,000. But instead, the Walmart heirs are taking the money. That's my point. Barbo, I hope you will call back another time and we can have a more thoughtful conversation on some of the other dimensions of this, but the machine is cutting us off here. Thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I have an 11-point plan for this country. We could touch on a few of those things. So, Lincoln Chafee used to be a Republican. This is what happens to the old-fashioned Republicans. I am convinced that if my father were still alive, he would be following in Lincoln Chafee's footsteps, because he always identified himself as an Eisenhower Republican. He called himself a conservative. Bob Dole called himself a conservative and bragged about the fact, when he ran for president against Bill Clinton, bragged about the fact that he expanded the Americans with Disabilities Act, that they expanded and strengthened Social Security, that they expanded the Clean Water Act, that he was one of the sponsors of the Clean Air Act. This is what conservatives used to stand for, conserving nature, making sure that we had a good and decent and clean country, helping America to be the richest nation in the world and not have abject poverty. We have the largest gap between the rich and poor in the United States that we have ever had. It's bigger than at any time in our history. And it was pretty big during the Gilded Era, during the Gilded Age, in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s. It's worse than that. And nobody's discussing this inequality, this extraordinary inequality. And why is that? Why is it there? Because billionaires have gamed the system and bought politicians, thanks to Supreme Court policies that allow this, bought politicians so that they can keep their taxes low. And anyway, Sam in Montgomery, Illinois. Hey, Sam, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to WCPT.
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thanks.
I was just listening to you talk with the one gentleman, the older gentleman who was in the Navy, about Walmart and how you were saying that Walmart, as a corporation, I strongly agree with you that corporations are not people. But I just had some information to give. Walmart actually is the biggest employer in the United States. They employ the most people.
Right.
Probably next to the federal government.
The post office is the second largest. Walmart is the largest. Yeah. The post office is the second largest. And the post office is the largest unionized employer.
Well, 46% of children whose parents are Walmart workers are actually on Medicaid.
Which is the health care services for the poor.
Which is the health care services for the poor. So the information that he was giving you was...
Yeah.
Was definitely
well, I think he'd. I don't think that he had looked it up. I mean, Shane was pulled up a Daily Coast story that said that 80% of Walmart workers qualify for food stamps, whether they're on them or not.
Not only that, with 80% of Walmart workers who qualify for food stamps. If you've ever read The Big Squeeze by Stephen Greenhouse, I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
I have not read it. I know about it, but I don't know it.
It's very good, and I would recommend it. But besides that, Walmart. During times of high purchasing, high purchasing time like Christmas, they also engage in the temp worker, part-time worker thing, where they employ people, just for the season. They actually get paid less than their part-time workers or full-time employees, and then they actually don't have to pay or match the Social Security tax that the workers pay from their right. from their paycheck.
When they call them contractors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Independent contractors, yeah. And then, reading this book, there's also it's very disturbing. Actually, a lot of times they will actually, in order to stay under budget, the managers are given a budget at Walmart, just as any other retail store, where they have to an operating budget they have to stay under. If they don't stay under that operating budget, one of their tactics actually is to go in via the computer. And actually delete people's hours because they don't want to pay overtime. So if an employee logs 52 hours, they'll go in and they'll actually change it to 42.
That's illegal, Sam.
It definitely is illegal. And there's many, many lawsuits against Walmart.
I know they've been busted for this kind of thing in the past. And this gets back to, and this doesn't even scratch the surface. I mean, I'm suggesting that even their legal business practices, the business practices that you would never point to and say that's against the law or that's a violation of the law or that's an overzealous employee or manager or whatever, just their legal business practices. And it's not just Walmart, by the way. This is corporate America in general, are inappropriate, are not. I mean, this is the wealthiest nation in the world. If we were still doing business the way we were before Reagan declared war on organized labor in 1981, if we were still doing business before Reagan started opening our trade barriers with most favored nation status and then, the setup for NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, if we were still doing business the way that we did during the Carter administration, during the Johnson administration, during the Nixon administration, during the Ford administration, during the Eisenhower administration, during the Kennedy administration, if we were still doing business that way, the average family in America, the working family, middle-class working family in America, would be making $90,000 a year, and they would be paying a lot of taxes on that. And we would have no problem with Social Security. We'd have no problem with Medicare. And, by the way, the top 1% or the top 100th of 1%, the Waltons of the world, instead of making tens of billions or dozens of billions or whatever, they'd be making maybe $1 billion, or hundreds of millions. And I think that they can live on that. So, Sam, thanks for the call. Dan in Warren, Michigan. Hey, Dan, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Hi, Tom. You have a wonderful program. I guess your doctor who called in caused quite a stir. Since he's a Korean veteran, he probably got himself through school on the GI Bill. And for him to say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, he's getting veterans health care. My health care is $1,500 a month, plus copay, plus deductible. And I only make $40,000 a year.
Mm.
So I'm struggling so bad that sometimes I do have to choose between my medicine and my groceries.
And you can't deduct that from your taxes either, because you're an individual.
No, so, exactly. So I think he's taking the benefits of the government and then saying, well, nobody should rely on the government. And
yeah.
I found him, you didn't question him on it, so I don't want to say he's being hypocritical, but I think a lot of people who have veterans health care don't realize the benefits they're getting.
Well, it's like the people who show up for the Tea Party rallies with a sign that says, keep your government hands off my Medicare.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's like the penny hasn't dropped yet. They haven't added two and two. That they got a free public education in this country. They got, you know, in the era of the GI Bill, they got a free college education. In fact, a stipend to go. My dad got a stipend to go to college, and he went. He was in the military about the time the Korean War started. He didn't fight in the Korean War. He was in Japan in the occupation forces after World War II. But it was that era. It was, you know, the late 40s. And you know, frankly, I don't think he ever added that up. That was the source of many of the conversations we had. So anyhow, Dan, thanks for the call. We will continue with our conversation. And how about bringing home my job, rolling back the Reagan tax cuts, stopping them from eating my town, having an informed and educated electorate? How about Medicare Part E for everybody?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And the IRS so-called scandal is not going away. It's been relentlessly pumped now with a new conspiracy theory some of these letters for more information came from Washington, D.C., but we thought that the people examining the IRS nonprofit applications were in Ohio. What's the deal? Jamie Weinstein is with us, the senior editor of the Daily Caller and co-author of The Lizard King, a really cool book, by the way. Jamie, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And DailyCaller.com, of course, the website, one of the few conservative news sites that I actually read every day. I've got to see what you guys are up to. So make your case, sir.
Well, I just think the scandal itself, or as you call the alleged scandal, needs to be investigated. I think that you need a special prosecutor. You know, a year ago, Tom, if someone made allegations, like some people did, that the IRS was targeting Tea Party groups, you would call them conspiratorial. I would tend to think that, you know, it would be unlikely that they would target Tea Party groups in a systematic way. We know that's true now.
Well, target is a little strong word, is it not? I mean, this is not audits. This is simply looking at applications. When you get an avalanche of applications from right-wing groups, I'm sure you saw this, you know, the New York Times piece about this, about, you know, what some of these groups were doing, like Emerge America. This was a left-wing group which lost their tax-exempt status because they said that they trained women to run for office. Turns out that they only trained Democrats, and so they lost their tax-exempt status. But, you know, the groups that are complaining on the right are like the Wetumpka Tea Party, you know, in Alabama. And they were working under the auspices of the Adopt a State program, which is a piece of Code Red USA, and which told supporters, quote, on November 6, 2012, Code Red USA authorizes the defeat of President Barack Obama. Or the Ohio Liberty Coalition, which sent out regular emails to members about Romney campaign events, organized protests around the state to demand the truth about Benghazi, and canvas neighborhoods handing out Romney campaign door hangers. That's not nonprofit activity, Jamie.
Of course, the excuse that they got an increase in applications has now been thoroughly debunked. You can go to factcheck.org. The increase in applications was almost non-existent between...
I'm not talking about an increase. I'm just talking about here are these groups that are saying, hey, we're Tea Party groups. And I would say, really? And you're not political?
No, they said the increase in applications... That was the excuse that Lois Lerner originally gave, is the reason they had to target certain groups as a way of processing them. We know now there was no super increase in applications.
Okay.
Now, there's a question over, you know, Tom, if they're not following the line, sure, you take away their tax-exempt status.
Or don't give it to them in the first place. That's what this was all about.
I don't like the whole process to begin with. I would eliminate it completely and allow people to give as much as they want to the candidate themselves. But there's no question that in this case, the IRS has admitted so far that they at least targeted conservative groups for extra scrutiny. I like to think that we need to investigate to see just how far it went. If there's nothing there, you know, we'll find nothing there. But if there's
okay.
something there,
this is from the Department of the Treasury, Office of the Inspector General. You can find this on their website. IRC subsection. This is the applications for 501c4 status. In 2009, there were 1,751. In 2010, this is, I guess, the year in question, 1,753. So it actually went down, applications for 501c4. Then 2011, although keeping in mind the fiscal year, the government's fiscal year starts in October. 2011, and the, you know, October, November is when the campaigns were really kicking in, went up to 2,265. And by 2012, it was 3,357.
It started in 2010 when they started targeting Tea Party
right.
groups.
Right.
When
there was point.
Went down slightly. And if,
right.
But I think
was a calendar year or fiscal year?
Well, according to factcheck.org, that is the correct number.
Okay. Well, let's assume that there was no increase. I mean, there was an increase over a several year period, but let's assume that there was no increase then. Still, if you're working at the IRS. And your job is to determine whether somebody is nakedly political or whether somebody is engaged primarily in social welfare work.
They ask the applicants things like what type of prayers do you do or what books do you read? These questions should have should not be coming from
nobody
the IRS.
Nobody was asked what kind of books do you read. They might have been asked what kind of books do you distribute.
Well, the book reading list, I'm not even sure that should matter. What kind of
book? If we distribute, you know, Glenn Beck books or we distribute Tom Hartman books, there's probably a political agenda there.
I'm not so sure that they should be asking that. Were they asking left-wing groups if they were distributing Tom Hartman books?
Yes, as a matter of fact. And in fact, you'll recall, I'm sure you probably reported on this extensively, in 2004 during the election when that super church, mega church in Pasadena, when the guy gave a sermon about how Jesus would not agree with preemptive war. And, you know, a week before the election, and George Bush's IRS investigated them for a full year, cost him a fortune.
Tom, what we know is that they deliberately looked for Tea Party groups that wanted to have names like Patriot in their name, groups that wanted to limit government at the exclusion. There was no similar thing for left-wing groups. So I think that, to me, is outrageous, especially coming from the IRS. Now,
there was a similar thing for left-wing groups. They just didn't have there are no left-wing groups that have a label. There's no left-wing equivalent of the Tea Party, Jamie.
The excuse was that they needed to deal with all the increase in applications. That was not true. As you just said, there was basically no increase in applications from 2009 to 2010 when they started implementing this. So that is not a legitimate excuse. I kind of want to know why they started targeting right-wing groups. You may be right. I am not a conspiracy-minded person. They may have done this complete mistake on a very
low. The Obama administration has both launched an internal investigation and a criminal investigation into this. Shouldn't you be here on the program saying, hey, props to President Obama?
No, I think we need a special prosecutor, someone of a very high stature to look into it.
You want Ken? You want to bring back Ken Starr?
Well, how about someone like Ted Olson, who has respect on both the left and the right, a Republican, no doubt, but also someone who led the fight against to legalize
Ted
gay
Olson,
marriage.
Who helped George W. Bush get nominated by put into the White House by the Supreme Court in 2000.
Oh, he was the lawyer for George W. Bush. He's a lawyer. Yes.
Yeah,
that's what lawyers do. They argue their cases.
I would suggest that probably most Democrats have even though Ted Olson, you know, defends gay rights, that most people have a bit of a grudge against him for that.
Well, I think, well, you know, writing
seems rather partisan.
Auditory articles in the New York Times about him. He doesn't seem particularly partisan.
Well, I'm not. I'm not.
but let me bring up other things. I think, I'm not a conspiracy-minded person. I think that there are some people coming forward saying that they're audited. It could be just, you know, ganging up that because they were conservative. But then I talked to a guy like Frank Vandersloot, who was a Romney donor, Tom. And he was attacked by the Obama administration campaign as, you know, an unseemly businessman who donates to Mitt Romney.
Right.
After that attack, he was audited 3 times in 4 months. Once audit by the Labor Department, 2 audits by the IRS, 1 personally.
But he's an incredibly rich guy. Incredibly rich guys get audited all the time.
I agree.
A lot of them keep lawyers on retainer because they get audited all the time. Because in order to get incredibly rich in America these days, often you have to do sleazy stuff.
I agree, Tom, but you do not think it is odd that as soon as he is targeted by the Obama campaign, he is audited three times.
I believe in coincidence, Jamie. I genuinely, and if your assertion is true, then heads should roll. Whoever suggested that, it's Nixonian, if that happened. And President Obama has said that if anything Nixonian happened, heads will roll.
Let's be clear. I don't have an assertion. I merely think that because we now...
Raising the question is making an assertion with your left hand instead of your right, Jamie.
No,
come on.
Absolutely not. We now know that something went on. I do not trust what the IRS is saying. I actually believe it is more likely that the atmosphere that the Obama administration and the Democrats created make it more likely that someone
but
on a lower...
These are lifelong bureaucrats. The head of the IRS was a Bush appointee.
I think you don't know who's in the IRS, what their political affiliation is.
I'm sorry. You haven't convinced me that there's a there, other than to the extent that the president agrees with you and he's going on a serious, we're going to find out what happened. But,
well, let's get a real investigation.
I think one is happening. Jamie Weinstein, dailycaller.com. Hang on just a second, Jamie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Comes in and steps on me every day. Senior editor of the Daily Caller, co-author of The Lizard King. Read it, dailycaller.com. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, you in the Los Angeles area, progressives know how to party. Join me and Lily Tomlin and Jim Hightower and John Nichols and other special guests at the Progressive Democrats of America annual get-together and fundraiser this Saturday, June 1st. This is a small event. It's going to be in a private home in Beverly Hills. And once you sign up, they'll send you the directions. It's a fundraiser, so there's a cost to be there. I'm volunteering my time and airfare and everything, but... This is, as is, I believe, everybody, but you can get the information over pdamerica.org. Click on the events tab for tickets and info, and or you can click the link over at tomhartman.com. And if you can't show up, you can also support Progressive Democrats of America at pdamerica.org. So it's a great organization, and they're doing great work. And yeah, they're leaning hard on Democrats. Surprise. Okay. By the way. I'm surprised Jamie didn't bring this up. Marco Rubio says he knows what the solution is to the IRS so-called scandal. Get rid of Obamacare. No, I'm not making this up. This is the headline over at Talking Points Memo. Rubio, the only answer to IRS scandal is to axe, A-X-E, Obamacare. Right. It's, and remember Lisa Jackson? First African-American ever had the EPA, and a very good administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, and constantly coming under attack from Republicans in the House and the Senate on talk radio, right-wing talk radio, on Fox. Oh, Lisa Jackson, she's promulgating more job-killing rules and regulations. She's a job killer, don't you know? She hates business. Well, funny thing, she's no longer, she left the EPA. And the most profitable company, isn't Apple the most profitable company in the world? They're one of the largest companies in the world. Anyway, one of the most largest and most profitable companies in the world just hired her. Apple just hired Lisa Jackson, and they hired her to green their company. They want to run all their servers on solar power. They've gotten all their toxics out of their products. They want to become, and this I genuinely think this isn't about greenwashing. I think it's about greening the company. Interesting. Steve in River Forest, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to point out that doctor who called in earlier, who couldn't recognize the difference between Obamacare and medical system under Cuba, it was infected by the Ayn Rand thought virus that individual liberty is the only value worth considering in public policy. And there's many ways to diagnose it, by their language, the way that they speak. But he couldn't understand what you were talking about because he's only got two boxes, one for those who value individual liberty and everybody else.
Right. Yeah, and here's the problem. Because I value individual liberty, and I recognize the truth of Franklin Roosevelt's statement in 1936, in July 27, 1936 in Philadelphia, when Franklin Roosevelt said, "A necessitous man is not a free man." He was quoting an old English judge. In other words, if you're hungry, you're not free. If you're homeless, you're not free. If you don't have medical care and you're sick, you're not free. If you want to be free, there are certain baselines. If you are 5 years old and you're born into a poor family and you have no opportunity to get a decent education, you are not free, and you will not be free for the rest of your life. To have freedom, there has to be a certain minimum level of the commons that is available to you. And off that, you can step off of that. And that's why the highest quality of life in the world is found right now in Denmark, Finland, Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, countries that call themselves democratic socialists that offer free college education to everybody, free, you know, primary education, primary and secondary education to everybody, the free health care to everybody. Literally cradle to grave, free health care to everybody, and have a fairly high tax rate. And their billionaires pay high taxes. And as a result of that, they pay their workers a decent wage. And in fact, we're the only one of the OECD countries that doesn't have mandated vacation pay, for example, and things like that. So, yeah, I'm with you, Steve. I think it's a tragedy. Brandon in Calvin, Oklahoma. Hey, Brandon, what's up? Brandon? No, Brandon. Tiffany in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Tiffany. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk to you about Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But before I do that, I just want to say something about Walmart. I am so upset when some people say they're the largest employer. I think we're forgetting about all the other companies they put out of business.
Yeah.
But in terms of Obamacare, many people are thinking too much government, too much government. The one point I want to make is, if we didn't put Obamacare into effect and people continue to be uninsured, we know they would go to the ERs. But the funny thing is, where does the ER get the money to fund these uninsured people?
From the government.
From the government.
Right.
And what if all the ERs decided we can't afford to keep our doors open and we're all going to close? Then what?
Then we're back to where we were before Reagan, actually. And oddly enough, it was Ronald Reagan, that great liberal, who said, if you show up in the ER, you have to be served, period, whether you can pay or not.
And often what was happening for a little while in Arizona, they were all closing their ERs. So even those wonderful, lucky people who had insurance, they had to travel hours to get to an ER. And I don't think people realize that's what they want to take us to. So now you have insurance, but your insurance isn't any good in your state. Now you have to travel great distances because of all the uninsured.
Right. Or
we all have to think.
Go ahead.
Yes.
No, finish your thought.
We're a collective.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have to take care of each other, or eventually.
Yeah. And if the ERs are not closing, they're clogged. They're so clogged with people who don't have, you know, life-threatening emergencies, like immediate life-threatening emergencies, that when people show up with immediate life-threatening emergencies, you know, they're stuck. Tiffany, Shano tells me that you're the winner of the book today. We're giving away a copy of my book, Rebooting the American Dream, 11
awesome.
Steps to Rebuild America. I'm glad you like it. Hang on. Let me put you on hold here. And Danielle, she's on line 4. And Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Steps to Rebuild Our Country by Tom Hartman. Autographed by me and sent to you courtesy of Stamps.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So is Rubio right? The only way to deal with the IRS scandal is to do away with Obamacare? And if he's not, or if he is, where does that logic come from? Welcome back. 33 minutes past the hour. Some of the headlines today. Larry King, by the way. You know, I do a TV show in the evening on the RT channel. RT is an international channel. We're in over 600 million homes in over 100 countries, as well as across the United States on Dish and Direct and other things. And our program is called The Big Picture. It's a one-hour show. And Larry King just joined RT. It's really cool. RT competes with Al Jazeera and CNN International and BBC, and it's just, you know, one of those international cable channels, satellite channels, all of the above. So Larry was in the studio last week, and the news release went out today. So soup-de-doop, cool stuff. In fact, I almost ran into him day before yesterday, but I, you know, it's a whole long story, but I've met Larry many times. He's a really decent man. What a good guy. He's got radio in his veins. Andrea in Salem, Oregon, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish TV satellite system. Hey, Andrea, what's up?
Hey, Tom, we miss you here in Oregon.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really sweet. I'm going to be there Monday for my daughter's graduation, but it's just going to be a...
Oh, good. Well, you're going to get some good weather. We've had a lot of rain the last few days. Hey, listen, you had a conservative caller on there a little from the last hour,
mm-hmm.
pulling out yet again the old meme, got to pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Well, I got news for him. All the shoes come from China.
Yeah.
And they don't come with bootstraps anymore. It adds too much to the bottom line.
Excellent. Very well said, Andrea. And you know, the sad irony is that, you know, you're right. And this is why we need to have a rational trade policy in the United States, among other things. These are the things that I wrote about in Rebooting the American Dream and that we talk about in this program all the time. And the Bernie Sanders is going off on all the time. Andrew, thank you for the call. Thanks for your kind words. Adam in Burnsville, Minnesota, listening on Minnesota's Progressive Voice, AM 950. Hey, Adam, what's up?
Hello. I just had a quick point to make. I did listen to the caller earlier,
mm-hmm.
conservative guy called. And my point, I have a couple points to make, but my first point is, to what he said, I think a lot of people don't realize, especially a lot of large corporations, I hear a lot of people say, well, we built this, we took the risk to make it. But what a lot of these people don't realize is anybody who is employed by you are taking the same risk because they're taking a risk and believing in your company,
yep.
believing that you're succeed.
Yep.
So we're all taking the risk together. And
yep.
as you said before, it's a shame that you have companies out here that pay the employees so small that ultimately, as Americans who work, we end up paying for a lot of the things that they should be getting through that company.
Yep.
So it's a terrible when you look at it that way. Also, another one of my points I wanted to make was the issue with college students these days. I was looking over, you know, the debt that's owed in America today, and they were saying, like, how student loans is one of the top things as far as, like, debt in America. And I was talking to my friend about this, and I said, when you truly think about it, all the people who go to school will end up in hundreds and thousands of dollars of debt. Think about how much money that is really taken away from the economy. When, you know, this country, it says so much about how we invest in education and we really want to push people ahead with education, but it's almost like a punishment when you go to college because you go to college and then you get out of school. And in my situation, I have a college degree and I have a military honorable discharge. And on top of that, every job I apply for tells me, you don't have experience. But
yes.
you ask yourself the question, how can you get a job? How can you get experience if you can't get the job? What's
right.
the point of the college?
Yeah. And so, this is where when we had a rational trade policy in this country that kept jobs in this country, and they were, you know, jobs where people could start out right out of high school and do an apprenticeship. My dad used to work at a Lansing tool and die shop. You know, it was a tool and die shop. And none of those guys had college educations. They came out of high school. And they, to the best of my knowledge, none of them had college education. So they came out of high school and they got a job as an apprentice. I mean, it was a union shop and it was like a 4 or 5 year apprenticeship you had to go through to become a journeyman tool and die maker. And once you were making a decent salary. What in today's dollars would probably be $60,000-$70,000 a year. And, you know, back then it was like, you know, 25 or 30, you know, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. But it was real money, and there were decent benefits, and you got health insurance, and you got a couple of weeks vacation a year, and that's where we would be right now if Reagan had not changed the rules of the game. As Robert Reich points out so brilliantly in this new Move On video, that right now, if we just were to roll back Reaganomics, the average working person in America would be making $90,000 a year. The labor market would have tightened back up. There would be all these entry-level jobs, regardless of skills. And people would be able to learn on the job and get those jobs. But we've gone insane. We've just turned America over to the billionaires and the transnational corporations. And you know, there was a bit of an uprising with Ross Perot, you know, when he challenged George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton on this. And then we seem to have gone back to sleep. And I think it's such a shame. Adam, thank you for the call. Thank you for your service to our country. And I wish you the very best in getting a job. It's a tough one. It's a really, really tough one. Steve in Rotunda, West Florida. Hey, Steve, thanks for watching Dish Satellite TV, the Free Speech TV Network. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
You good, but you'll get better.
Yeah, you're right. I'm great, but I'll get better.
Well,
especially my arm stops hurting.
At least that's what I've been told.
Yeah.
But anyway, yesterday you were talking about one of your first jobs, TV repair.
Yeah, one of my first businesses, actually. Yeah, and then when Louise got pregnant, we moved down to Detroit, and I got a job as an engineer at RCA doing that too. So, yep.
Yeah, my brother became a licensed ham operator at 12.
I got my ticket at 13.
Ran three TV shops.
Yeah.
He was WGAN, but
I was WAMWL.
Anyway, he worked all his life until he passed away earlier this year at 71.
Oh my.
But I bought a TV,
mm-hmm.
and after about 2.5 years, it failed. It didn't work anymore.
Right.
So I have a little bit of experience with electronics. I was in electronics in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took it apart and called him for some advice on what to check. So I checked it out, and I came down to the power supply was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I called the company. I had the 800 number in the manual, and ordered a power supply. They took my credit card number and said they won't charge it until it's shipped because mm-hmm. they were out of stock.
Right.
Well, 3 weeks later, I called back, and they said they're no longer manufacturing that. You can't get that
power supply.
This was a flat-screen TV, the one you called throwaways.
Yeah.
But you don't have to throw it away.
Yeah.
Because there's a federal law that says manufacturers have to keep parts on hand for 5 years from the date of manufacture.
Really?
And so I called the company again, and they said, send it in, and we'll check it out. And I didn't want to pay all that for boxing it up and shipping it in. So I went to the store where I bought it, which it was Sam's Club, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's okay.
I did use them then. And explained the situation to them. They took it back and gave me a full refund on the TV.
Yeah.
Because the manufacturer did not have the parts on hand for the 5 years required by federal law.
Wow.
So if you get that out to your people, if you're...
You just did, Steve.
Your listeners, your watchers...
Yeah,
I'm sure if they have a TV that goes bad or any other electronic equipment that goes bad, they can get a full refund on that item.
If the company doesn't have the spare parts within 5 years. That's fascinating. Steve, thanks for the heads up on that and for the flash to the past. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Jerry in Amityville, New York, listening on WWRL. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? Yeah, on the IRS T40 controversy, I just had to respond to your last guest, Jamie Weinstein,
uh-huh.
and his saying that there needs to be a special prosecutor involved in this case.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's suggesting the prosecutors should go after the IRS, I think just the opposite is true. I think we need a special prosecutor to investigate the so-called Tea Party and whether or not they're trying to perpetrate a fraud on both the IRS and we, the American taxpayers, by claiming they're primarily a social welfare organization when they appear to be primarily a political organization that's simply masquerading as a social welfare group, in my opinion, just in order to get this special type of 501c4 tax-exempt status that permits them to do two things. They can avoid naming their donors, and they can also take in unlimited amounts of contributions, and that's the reason that they wanted the special 501c4 classification, in my opinion, instead of going as a 527 or some other tax-exempt group. And as far as I'm concerned, when an organization claims to be primarily a social welfare organization for purposes of getting any kind of tax-exempt status, it's the IRS's job to make sure that the claim is legitimate and not bogus and simply being done in an attempt to avoid paying taxes that they would otherwise have to pay. And I think that's the bigger issue, and also the bigger issue of whether any group that is anything other than primarily a social welfare group feeding the poor, as you've given examples in the past of, unless a group is actually doing that.
Yeah, I think the real scandal here, Jerry, if there's a real scandal with the IRS, is that the IRS is not enforcing their own rules. And they're not saying, are you actually doing social welfare work or promoting social welfare work? And I just don't think that, you know, canvassing for Mitt Romney is social welfare work. Or canvassing for Barack Obama, for that matter. Jerry, thank you for the call. I really think that we should be going back to core principles and saying social welfare is social welfare. And maybe we need to have an expanded definition of it. Maybe that's what Congress needs to do or the IRS needs to do.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
By expanded, I don't mean let's include canvassing for presidential candidates. What I mean is let's come up with a list of, okay, schools, food banks, you know, that kind of thing. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, we had a caller earlier who was talking about, you know, there's not really a poverty problem in America, and there's not a crisis, a social crisis. There is a woman that I work with, Louise and I work with, over at the TV network at RT, who, you know, yesterday was Tuesday, right? Yeah, yesterday, when we came back from, it was our first day back from the long Labor Day weekend, and we were walking to the building together, and she's African-American, and her family is from Baltimore, and I, you know, we said, hey, how was your weekend? And she said, oh, fine, if you could have, ignore the shootings. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, you know, I went back to my neighborhood, and it's kind of a dicey neighborhood. And she said, within 5 minutes of the time I was there, 3 people were killed. And over the course of the first day I was there, 8 people were killed in my neighborhood. I mean, within a few blocks of my house. And it's like, whoa. And it's just, I mean, so many Americans are so completely out of touch with this that, or maybe not killed, maybe shot was the right word she used. I don't want to exaggerate the situation, but I think that she said killed. And that, I mean, we have a genuine disaster, a slow motion disaster going on in this country. And it's getting worse every day as a consequence of 32 years of Reaganomics, 33 years now of Reaganomics. And we need to do something about it. We need to fix it. Steve in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? I just want to say that I really love your show.
Thanks.
Wonderful, wonderful work. Let's see, just to be real quick on this, I've worked in corporate America for over 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, three different companies, worked my way up, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, bam, I got hit with a condition that I could not work anymore. Mm-hmm. At the time I was working for a large insurance company, I had purchased excellent disability coverage. And just to see how all the laws are stacked against your average Joe, all of a sudden I received a letter from one of their doctors that I had never seen that said, you are fine, you could work, we're cutting you off, you don't have a job, have a good life.
Hmm.
So I had to get a lawyer, my cost. Luckily, I had the cash for it. If I didn't, I would have been screwed. They stopped my health care coverage. Pretty much it cost me about $100,000, at least to this point, to get my disability reinstated.
Wow. From an insurance policy that you've been paid for all these years.
Yes. And I pay for many years. And also there's a law in the state of New Jersey that says that a corporation cannot be sued for legal fees. So they have no loss to cut anyone off.
Because
I am disabled.
Yeah.
They cut you off, no laws, you have to pay. If
you get screwed,
afford it, you're going to be on the
And I guarantee you, if that law is as you've described, it's because some corporation or a group of corporations, a Chamber of Commerce type of group, you know, bought some members of Congress to get it passed. Steve, thank you for sharing your story. It is a gruesome story. Mark in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I listen to your program all the time, and thank you very much for what you do.
Sure.
There was a gentleman who just called earlier who explained that he has a college degree, and he's also a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And because
he was a doctor.
He had so much, Right, he had so much military experience that it didn't necessarily translate into civilian experience. And I just I just wanted to share with your listeners that the military has programs for people who have spent a lot of time in the military and are having trouble transferring those skills into the civilian world. And all veterans have to do is contact the nearest military installation. And if they were Army, or if it's an Army installation, it's called the ACAP program, the Army Career and Alumni Program. And if they're Navy or Marine Corps or Air Force, it's called the TAP program. But what they'll do is they'll look at their military experience and they'll work with the veteran on transferring those skills into the civilian world.
Cool. That's great. So check with your local military base. If you're a vet who can't find a job, they may be able to help you out. Mark, thanks for sharing that information. I appreciate it. And I'm sure many of our veterans who are watching or listening appreciate it. Michael in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Michael.
How you doing?
Great. You want to talk about Obamacare?
You know, everybody keeps using the government's running this Obamacare, but really, before Obamacare, one health care company would control all the health care in one particular state.
Yeah, and over half the states, that was pretty much the case. And in about an additional third of the states, it was two or three companies at the most. You're right.
Exactly. And he broke the monopoly so that now over 100 different companies will bid for our service for us to become a part of their company, which will, if you got 100 different healthcare companies, the cost is going to go down.
Yep. That's why Connecticut and California, when they finally rolled out their healthcare exchanges, where you compare literally apples, well, not literally apples, but apples to apples, you know, the silver programs and gold programs and whatnot, comparable programs to each other. The health insurance prices are much lower than they would be today if you were to simply go in and buy them, because they know that they have to compete in the public arena.
And 40 million people that didn't will now, these companies will now get them.
Yeah.
And have to bid and fight each other, which will be make it competitive, but they're private companies. So all this madness about calling it government-run and all this, that's insane. Yeah.
No, the only part that's government-run about it is that the government runs the bazaar, basically. They run the shopping center, you know, where you can walk in and say which healthcare company you want to buy. They're, you know, the individual state governments set up the exchanges. And I would like them to do that because you want to make sure that the companies are honestly representing their products, you know, what they have to offer. And by the way, if any company, you know, if the companies had wanted to do this, they would have done it a long time ago. They don't like competition. So this is government doing what it's supposed to do, making sure that there is competition in the free market. Michael, brilliant comment. Thank you so much for the call. We'll be back right after the news at the top of the hour. It's 57 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program, taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Yesterday, this was a big deal. Federal prosecutors, it's kind of a big deal and not a big deal, and I let me explain to you why. Federal prosecutors in New York yesterday announced that the operators of this global online currency exchange, it was kind of like a PayPal run out of Costa Rica or something, that they were actually running a $6 billion money laundering operation, which acted as a central hub for criminals trafficking and everything from child porn to identity theft. And over a period of 7 years, Liberty Reserve... Always one of those wonderful names. Can you imagine if they got that before the IRS looking for 501c4 status? Hey, we're Liberty Reserve. That's probably why they went 7 years and nobody took a second look at them. Oh, they must be a Tea Party group. Don't touch them. Can't you see the Obama administration? Be afraid. Be very afraid. Don't go near them. They will criticize us. Anyhow, over a period of 7 years, Liberty Reserve conducted more than 55 million transactions for millions of customers around the world, including 200,000 customers here in the U.S. So last Friday, officials in Spain arrested Liberty Reserve founder Arthur Badovsky, who's among seven people arrested and charged in the case. So all those charged face counts of conspiracy to commit money laundering, conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitting business, and operating an unlicensed money So it looks like those responsible for the biggest online cyber money laundering case in history are going to be held criminally accountable for their actions. Ta-da! Great news, right? $6 billion, $9 billion, an enormous amount of money that they were money laundering. This is a terrible thing. If only we could say the same thing for the real big money launderers, like HSBC. Back in December of last year, the Department of Justice and the U.S. Treasury announced that HSBC, the world's largest bank, the second largest bank in the United States, had laundered money for some of the most notorious international drug cartels in the world, while also illegally conducting transactions on behalf of terrorists and customers in Iran, Libya, Cuba, Sudan, and Burma. Between 2006 and 2009, according to federal officials, HSBC, here's the phrase, failed to monitor. This is what they call money laundering.
You didn't notice that that was the mafia giving money to the drug lords.
Anyhow, failed to monitor a staggering $670 billion in wire transfers and an additional $9.4 billion in cash transactions from its operations in Mexico. Let me get this straight. If I walk into the bank or you walk into the bank and say, you know, I got some money in your bank and I'd like $5,000, please, in cash, they are required to call the FBI. Anything over $5,000, it used to be over $10,000. Now it's over $5,000. They got to call the Department of Homeland Security and say, hey, this apartment guy wants $5,000 out of his bank account in cash. HSBC, not so much. As a result, according to officials, at least $881 million in drug trafficking money, same $5,000, including money from the Sinaloa cartel of Mexico and the Norte de Valle cartel of Colombia, was laundered by this big bank. The Department of Justice also said that HSBC helped process $660 million in illegal transactions. Illegal is supposed to mean something, right? From Iran, Cuba, Sudan, Libya, and Burma by intentionally hiding the identity of the countries. When they first held the news conference announcing the bust, Assistant U.S. Attorney General Lanny Brewer said, HSBC is being held accountable for stunning failures of oversight. The record of dysfunction that prevailed at HSBC for many years was astonishing. End of quote. He's going to hold them accountable, right? But what does being held accountable really mean? Does it mean sending banksters who helped perpetrate a bloody drug war and laundered billions for drug kingpins to jail? No. Being held accountable means that they signed what's called a deferred prosecution agreement, a DPA, with the Department of Justice, under which no criminal charges will be brought against the bank or any of their banksters, as long as they meet certain conditions. Those conditions include paying a $1.9 billion fine. Did I mention this was a $600 billion operation? Despite laundering hundreds of billions of dollars illegally, dealing with some of the world's most nefarious drug cartels, allegedly laundering money for terrorist groups, and moving money for customers in nations that the U.S. has no diplomatic ties with, HSBC got off with a slap on the wrist from the DOJ. Even Republicans, well, maybe especially Republicans, because this is a Democratic administration. I mean, this is the Bush or the Obama DOJ, found the notion of HSBC getting off with what amounts to a slap on the wrist, despite blatantly criminal behavior. Even Republicans found that appalling. Chuck Grassley, Republicans, our perennial Republican. Back when the settlement was first announced, he said, the DOJ, this is inexcusable that they had not brought criminal prosecutions against the bank. In fact, he wrote a letter to AG Eric Holder. He He said, "What I have seen from the Department of Justice is an inexplicable unwillingness to prosecute and convict those responsible for aiding and abetting drug lords and terrorists. I cannot help but agree with an editorial in the New York Times that the government has bought into the notion that too big to fail is too big to jail." Now, the maybe good news is that the HSBC slap on the wrist agreement with the DOJ appears to have stalled out. Judge John Gleason, who's overseeing the case, is now believed to be considering rejecting the so-called settlement and deferred prosecution agreement, which could open up HSBC to criminal prosecution and maybe even losing their charter to do business in the U.S. But if history is any indicator, don't hold your breath. Regardless of whether Judge Gleason rejects the deal, you know, how is it? How did we get here? That a big bank, a multi-trillion dollar bank that launders hundreds of billions of dollars for criminals, hasn't seen a single perp walk. But an online company can have its CEO arrested and prosecuted along with a bunch of other executives. Well, the reason why Liberty Reserve is going to jail and HSBC isn't is because Liberty Reserve is not a real bank. If it's not a real bank, then its employees and its CEO are not real banksters. Banksters are protected. They're a protected species. They're not an endangered species. They're a protected species. And since the Liberty Mutual guys are not banksters, they can't hide behind the millions of dollars in contributions to American politicians that American banksters have been passing out. Since the executives at Liberty Reserve were not the anointed elite of the Jamie Dimons and the Lloyd Blankfeins of the world, they're going to face the full force of the American criminal justice system. Or at least one of them. I mean, right now we have two criminal justice systems in America. One for the wealthy elite, the corporations and the big banks, and a second one for everybody else. And thanks to this double standard, corporations like Walmart that dump toxic waste get off with a fine, but if you or I, an actual person, did the same thing, we'd be facing years in jail. 5 to 15, to be specific. It's time to end this double standard. Big corporations, big banks, they need to be held accountable for their actions just like everyone else, and banksters who launder money for drug cartels and hostile foreign nations need to be facing jail time, not just a slap on the wrist. Back in the 80s, after Reagan deregulated the SNLs and they predictably went on a binge of illegal activity and then collapsed, Reagan investigated and prosecuted over 1,000 banksters and sent several hundred of them to jail. The most famous was Charles Keating, who went to jail even though he'd been giving huge payoffs to the infamous Keating Five senators, including John McCain. You know, if Reagan could send politically connected banksters to jail, Obama can do it too. Time to let some potheads out of prison, but keep the cells warm for the banksters. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Let me say it again. Time to let some potheads out of prison, but keep the cells warm for the banksters. You know, if Obama started doing that, his popularity would go up. Oh, this kind of falls into the category. Remember when the IRA? The National Rifle Association, the NRA, said, oh, the solution of shootings in school? Let's put armed guys in the schools, right? Let's take some guys with guns and put them in schools. Headline over at Raw Story. High school security guard arrested for threatening to shoot up school. Duh. What could possibly go wrong? Carol in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on AM 950, Minnesota's progressive voice. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I love the big government types that want a special prosecutor.
Hi, you're right. They want more big government to investigate the government.
Right. And when you consider that, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Ken Starr milked that for almost 10 years.
And $74 million.
I thought it was $80 million.
Or maybe it was 80, but my recollection is it was 70. I'm pretty good with numbers. Lousy with names, pretty good.
Well, maybe it was
whatever
after
it was.
Ken Starr left, but I thought the final, I seem to recall the final amount, and I think there was somebody that wrote the last report, and it was issued sometime in the 2000s.
Yeah, okay. My numbers are a decade old at least, yeah.
The final total on that was like
$80
million. $80 million.
Yeah.
And that's what the big government anti-tax guys want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what they really want to do is they want to impeach Obama. And they're looking for anything to do it. And if Benghazi had caught some traction, they'd be calling. In fact, some of them had already called for a special prosecutor about Benghazi. They're now calling for a special prosecutor about the IRS. I mean, we have seen this movie before. Remember when Hillary Clinton fired somebody in the White House travel office and it was called Travelgate and they wanted a special prosecutor? And then somebody who used to work with her at the Rose Law Firm when she was like 25 years old, fresh out of college, a law student or a school graduate, young lawyer. And they said, oh, well, she was involved in some case in some nasty. And they had to find all these documents and they couldn't find them. And then finally Hillary found them in the basement of the White House. I mean, if somebody comes to you and says, I want to see the documents from when you worked, 30 years ago. It's like, I couldn't find that kind of stuff. It's like, it might take me a few months. And even if it exists. And then that was Rosegate, Rose Law. And then the Bill and his Whitewater land deal that he lost $32,000 on, investing in. And he's got and ultimately they got him, they nailed him on Monica. But this is what Republicans do to Democratic presidents in their second term. Go ahead.
How do we, I am working my tail off, but I'm in a blue state. And getting rid of, the best news I heard today was Michelle Bachmann isn't going to run again. And I think the reason she's not going to run again is she knows she can't win.
Right, which is why it's actually bad news. Because they may get a rational Republican in there who can win, which it would be kind of depressing.
Well, I don't know that to tell you the truth, I do not know that there are any rational Republicans left.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That are still interested in running for public office. Because I look around, Minnesota went blue, and I think the reason Minnesota went blue was because of the irrational Republicans that we have in this state.
Lincoln Chafee just became a Democrat. And who is this other Republican who's complaining about what happened to my party?
I don't know, but I know here in Minnesota. I mean, Tim Pawlenty.
Oh yeah, Lindsey Snowy is.
They thought he was okay, but he was just as radical as Walker. He just couldn't get by with it in Minnesota.
Right, right, yeah, yep. I think you're right, and it's going to be interesting that that primary for Michelle Bachmann's seat is going to be really interesting unless she resigns like 2 days before her term ends. And somebody gets appointed or some months before, which I doubt she'll do. The question in my mind is she quitting because she talked to a pollster or a prosecutor or both? And I think the answer might be both, but we'll see. Carol, thank you for the call, and I wish you well. Minnesota has some challenges with all the leftover right-wing wackos, but Minnesota's a good state, and there's a lot of very, very good people there, so I think you'll pull it through. Bill in St. Helens, Oregon. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Tom. One comment off topic. On HSBC, if they were you and me, their assets would have all been forfeit under RICO. Anyway, I'll leave that at that.
You're right. You're right.
Yes. Yes. A while ago, a guy was talking about pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and I'm kind of like, it's hard to do when corporate America's kicking even the lowest of the low. And one of the gentlemen mentioned wage theft, and you just said it's illegal. Well, a 2008 study of wage theft in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York said that 68% of low-income workers are having wages stolen continuously. 68%. So the average worker in those three cities loses $51 a week.
Wow.
It says they lose on average of 15% of their earnings. And for just those three cities, the study estimates that the low-wage workers are losing $56.4 million per week because of these labor violations.
Yeah.
Even if you don't care about the poor workers trying to get ahead, trying to pull themselves up, and we have to steal from the poorest of the poor, there's such things as unfair competition. How do I compete against the guy who's cheating his workers out of wages?
Right.
This is lost tax revenue. People aren't paying taxes on wages. They're not being paid.
Right.
This is a huge scandal. It's one of the biggest scandals in this country, and we're just not talking about it.
Yeah. Excellent point, Bill. We did have there's a fellow who wrote a book about that about 6 months ago. It was on this show, and we've talked about it a few times. But I think you're right. Thank you very much. Evelina in Santa Rosa, California, listening on KBBF. Evelina, we have a minute to the break. It's yours. Evelina?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I just wanted to welcome you to Northern California, KBBF 89.1 FM.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
Everybody's really enjoying your program. And my point I just want to make is just a big general statement that if you feel that if we were to put our government system into a profile, does it seem to you that it's sociopathic and narcissist the way they're treating the backbone of the economy, which is the working class?
Yeah, I would not disagree with that statement. In fact, I think that the billionaires who are promoting these libertarian worldviews, I would even go beyond sociopathic and narcissistic. I'd say that they're also suffering from hoarding syndrome. It's an interesting piece in the New York Times over the last couple of days about hoarding syndrome. Well, these people are hoarding money, but it's the same psychopathology. Evelina, thank you. Thanks for the welcome.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Marco Rubio, we've got to respond to the IRS scandal by cutting Obamacare. I'm still trying to figure out what he's talking about. The good, the bad, and the very, very xanthrocroidally ugly, the good. Governor John Hickenlooper. Yesterday, the Colorado governor signed into law a package of bills that will help put in place the nation and the world's first regulated marijuana market. Now, all Coloradans 21 and older will be able to purchase up to an ounce of recreational pot at licensed dealerships and grow as many as six plants for personal use. Governor Hickenlooper, who at one time opposed the legalization of marijuana, called the new rules common sense. Well said, Governor. The American people can start electing more reasonable politicians like you. Maybe we will see another common sense law passed, national marijuana legalization. The bad, Bill Kinter. In a profile published in the Monday edition of the Lincoln Journal Star, the Nebraska state senator made some, less than complimentary comments about women. When asked about the biggest mystery in his life, he responded by saying, "Women, no one understands them. They don't even understand themselves. Books and books and books have been written about it. No one understands it." No, Bill, women do understand themselves, and they want Republicans like you to stop making decisions about what they can do with their bodies. Maybe if your party understood that, it might start winning a few national elections. And the very, very ugly Rush Limbaugh. During the Tuesday broadcast of his radio show, the conservative pundit made a politically incorrect description of the relationship between President Obama and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Take a listen.
It's a master-servant relationship. That is exactly the kind of bipartisanship that the drive-by media wants. Master-servant. That's bipartisan. That's what's going on here. Master-servant. Master, staff, don't take it any further than that, Snurdly. I'm not going there. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, don't pretend you don't know what you're talking about, Rush. You do. Conservative pundits have taken this whole sort of race baiting to a whole new level during the Obama administration, and that's very, very ugly.
That's incredibly ugly.
Oh, my. Philippe in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Philippe, what's up?
Oh, hi. Hey, Tom, hold on.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm at work.
That's quite all right.
First-time caller.
Thank you.
I have a very important question for you.
Okay.
I just got my second associate, so I just got a bunch of opportunities arising, so I just applied everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the few places that called me back and offered an internship was MoveOn.org,
mm-hmm.
a progressive organization.
Yep.
And my mission is just to the pursuit of social justice and overall change for good. But my parents are really against me moving away all the way to California. And they think it might be risky to get involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
We migrated from Brazil, so the political situation over there is a little different.
Yeah.
I think they grew up in a time where the dictatorship probably...
It's a little less stable in here, yeah.
So, yeah, I have a couple of questions. What do you think of their reputation? Is it risky, and is it a good way to help out?
Sure. MoveOn.org is a great organization. They have a good reputation. they have been around long enough and they have built up a large enough base of donors and funders that they're not going to go away anytime soon. And I don't have a lot of personal knowledge of MoveOn.org. It's an organization that I've never been inside of, but I have shared speaking platforms with one of the founders of MoveOn.org, and I've quoted their work and used their work and watched their work for it seems like a decade at least, and I think that they're a great organization. So I would if you have other reasons not to move across the country or other reasons not to take the job, those might be legitimate. But the things that you just described, you know, do they have a good reputation? Are they going to be around, and you know, so that you could have a future with them? And is the world of politics one that's unstable? Politics is terribly stable in the United States. It's one of its problems. The parties are fairly well entrenched. And so, you know, an organization like MoveOn.org is going to be around for a long time, and they are a good group. So, Philippe, does that help?
Yes, sir. I respect your opinion great, and my parents don't know much about politics, so I don't think they, frankly, know what they're talking about.
Okay.
All right. Heart in the right place.
Well, you might want to spend some time, you know, just looking up the history of MoveOn.org and what they've done, and, you know, I think that should be pretty that would be pretty impressive in and of itself. So good luck, Philippe, and you know, give us a call in a few months if you're doing the internship, and let us know how it's working out, okay?
We do. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Dennis in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Dennis. What's up?
Hey, Tom. What an honor to speak to you. I really appreciate all your insights and what you do for America.
Thank you.
It's great to see a little sanity put into this insane world of politics.
We're trying.
So my question is, it seems that the only way out of the scenario we're in here is to have campaign funds 100% financed by the government.
That's Bernie Sanders' solution.
Of writing the laws. So what can be done? Who's going to do it? When's it going to happen? What's the likelihood of America moving forward with this kind of initiative?
There are two things that would have to happen for that to happen. The first is that the Supreme Court's doctrine that money is the same thing as speech. It's not actually property. It doesn't represent houses or wealth. It's actually speech, and therefore protected under the First Amendment. That would have to be struck down. Now, that could be done by the Supreme Court, or it could be done by a constitutional amendment, which is what movetoamend.org is all about. And so that would be the first prerequisite. The second is we already have that in place, at least at the federal level, and that's that check-off thing on your taxes where you can check and say, yes, send $5 or $10 or whatever it is these days to the federal fund. And consider there's 300 plus million people in America. There's about 115 million of us who are working. About 100 million of us file tax returns. So if 100 million people kicked in $10 each every year, that's 100 million times 10 is a billion. So that's $1 billion a year. And presidential elections are every 4 years. So that's $4 billion over a four-year period. If that was just devoted to the presidential election, the last presidential election, there was about $2.5 billion spent. The one before that, on both sides, it was about $1 billion that was spent. So we could easily fund a presidential campaign with a $10 checkoff, or it might rise up to $12 or $15 or something like that. And if we wanted to also fund statewide and local races, you know, kick that annual contribution of every taxpayer in America up to $25 or $30, and you've got that. So coming up with the money is not going to be all that difficult or expensive, frankly, but the challenge is the will. And I think a lot of legislators would love this. They wouldn't have to spend all this time on the phone. But we can't pass laws saying that, quote, limit the right of speech. In other words, limit somebody's right to spend money on top of the money they're getting from the government or instead of the money they're getting from the government. I mean, in the last election, both Obama and Romney opted out of the federal program. Because they could raise and spend more money than the federal program had in it. And, you know, in England, on the other hand, they say if you spend more than £100,000 on a parliamentary election, you can't be seated in Parliament, you know, if anybody spends that on your behalf. So that's why their elections are only 5 or 6 weeks long. And we could do something like that, but we'd have to overturn the Supreme Court's doctrine first. So that's my thoughts on that, Dennis. Thanks a lot for the call. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Great.
Before my comment, last week you said twice that President Eisenhower gave us the GI Bill. It was actually President Roosevelt in 1944.
You're absolutely right. And President Truman, who really escalated. What I said, I was, as I recall, talking with a Republican, and what I said was that Eisenhower gave millions of, or maybe hundreds of thousands, I don't know the numbers, of Americans, my dad was one of them, a free college education on the GI Bill. And he did. I mean, they were still passing out money on the GI Bill throughout the 1950s. It was my way of scoring a Republican point against a Republican. You know, because I am convinced that if today any of these, you know, if Ted Cruz was the president of the United States or even John McCain and we had a GI Bill, they would refuse to pass out the money.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was the point I was trying to make. But you're absolutely right. The GI Bill was, you know, FDR came up with it. Truman really, you know, took it into full implementation after the war was over. And then Dwight Eisenhower and, frankly, Jack Kennedy, they were still passing out GI Bill money during Kennedy's administration, continued it.
Yeah. But also I wanted to comment on the, you know, you were saying that President Obama hasn't prosecuted the banksters, which I absolutely agree should be done.
Yeah.
But I just want to point out that could you imagine if he tried to do that? You know, the media and the Republicans would say, he's a socialist. See, we told you he's a socialist. He's attacking these businessmen, these fine businessmen, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, look what they're doing over the IRS. All the IRS did was ask a bunch of teabaggers a few questions, and they're saying, the IRS is targeting these poor people.
Right, they're hysterical. You may be right. I suspect if he was to prosecute banksters that he would get a lot of public support and from some surprising quarters. The problem is that because of this Supreme Court doctrine that money is speech, the Obama campaign and Democrats get a lot of their money from banksters, just like the Republicans. I mean, the Republicans get proportionally more, although in the 2000 election, Obama got more from the banksters than McCain did. And this is not to condemn Obama or McCain or anybody else. It's a broken system. And we need to unbreak that system because the bankers control so much money that they become untouchable. Paul, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So if you want to roll back this doctrine that money is speech, check out MoveToAmend.org. Start a local group in your community. Hey, progressives know how to party. Are you in the Los Angeles area? You can join me and Lily Tomlin and Jim Hightower and John Nichols and more special guests at the Progressive Democrats of America annual get-together and fundraiser this Saturday. It's what, 3 days from now? Something like that. Yeah, this Saturday, June 1st. Go to pdamerica.org, click the events tab for tickets and info, click the link at Tom Hartman, or you can click the link at TomHartman.com. And if you can't attend, you can show your support with the PDA Pave the Way to 2014 link. So, great organization. And this is, by the way, this is going to be a small venue. There's I think, a maximum of 50 people who are invited because it's in a private home. And it's a couple $100 contribution to be there. We're all paying our own way and showing up for free. And this is a fundraiser for a really great group, Progressive Democrats of America. Anthony, in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, you are a conservative, and you want to comment on my comment on Rush Limbaugh?
Well, kind of, sort of, Tom. First of all, thanks for taking my call. Second, I just want to say I appreciate your program because you're not one of those guys that screams at you like Rush Limbaugh.
Okay.
But there's guys on the left that do that, too. And I just want to say,
sure,
you know, the more lip service we pay to those guys, it's all about money. You know, these guys that you know, if you say something negative about them, they get the bad press, but it's better than no press whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I just want to.
I don't think that my commenting on Rush Limbaugh talking about a master-servant relationship between Christie and Obama or vice versa is going to give him any more publicity that's going to make him any more money. I guarantee you all my listeners know who he is.
Oh, yeah. But my point is, something like that is definitely out of line. I'm not going to disagree with that at all.
Yeah.
But my point is, when we highlight these guys, anything we say about Limbaugh on a daily basis,
yeah,
it encourages them. And that's the last thing we need to do. Because I know I have a lot of conservative friends, and none of us listen to that guy because we know he's a big blowhard.
Well, then maybe I should be encouraging him. You know, it's like I really want Michelle Bachmann to run for the House of Representatives again. You know, I really want her to. It's like, where?
Come on, we don't need that kind of entertainment. That's like having Nancy Pelosi in there.
Come on. Nancy Pelosi was wonderful. I'm a big Nancy Pelosi fan. I think that I think she was really good. She's a really strong woman, and she got a lot done. You might not like what she got done, but she got a lot done. John Boehner can't get anything done.
No, it's funny because I respect her. I respect her, Hillary Clinton, because they've done a lot and they've risen to the tops of their field. But at the same time, I don't necessarily agree with the politics. So, you know, there's a respect there, but at the same time, we just don't see eye to eye on things.
Yeah. I would just like to see John Boehner get some decent legislation, some bipartisan agreement, get some things passed. Nancy Pelosi was able to get all kinds of legislation out of the House of Representatives, and they passed hundreds of good pieces of legislation. A lot of them died in the Senate, but I mean, in particular, things like, you know, stopping giving American corporations tax breaks for shipping jobs overseas. Right now, when an American corporation tears down a factory here and ships that factory over to Vietnam brick by brick, and machine by machine, they actually get a tax break. They actually show a tax profit on doing that. Nancy Pelosi got a bill out of the House of Representatives to put an end to that practice. And it went to it passed, and Republicans voted for it as well as Democrats in the House. It went to the Senate, and, you know, some senator, probably Tom Coburn, put a hold on it and filibustered it, and it died. And it's like, where are these people? I mean, you know, maybe you can explain it to me, Anthony. You call yourself a conservative. Why are conservatives not joining the liberals, the genuine liberals? Because most Democrats, by the way, are in favor of free trade. But you get the liberal Democrats, you know, the Sherrod Browns, the Jan Schakowskis, the Peter DeFazios, the Bernie Sanders of the world, although Bernie's an independent, they will tell you that free trade is a crock. It's a ripoff of the American people. And it used to be that the Republicans were the ones opposed to free trade. I don't know what has happened to your party.
Well, see, that's an excellent segue to what I was bringing up Rush Limbaugh about. The problem is we're falling prey to this tabloid journalism where everybody on the left is evil or everybody on the right is evil, and nobody wants to work together to move the country forward.
Right.
And I just
I don't disagree with
why I was bringing up about Rush Limbaugh. I mean, we're too polarized right now, and I'm blaming the media, and that's why I appreciate your show, because you seem to be reasonable, and you're not one of those guys that screams at people.
Okay. Well, you know? Sometimes I do.
yeah.
Get me wound up enough here, Anthony. But no, your point is well made, and our good, bad, ugly segment is more lighthearted than anything else. I didn't spend an hour trying to disembowel Rush Limbaugh on the air or anything like that. But I would genuinely like to see John Boehner accomplish some of the things that Nancy Pelosi accomplished, even if it's legislation that I disagree with. I think that, you know, our process has just gotten so stagnant. And I think it's, frankly, because of the internecine warfare that's going on between the Boehner faction of the Republican Party, the old official Republican Party, and the Eric Cantor segment of the party, the Tea Party segment of the party. The Republican Party is being torn apart from within, and the Tea Party guys are being funded by the billionaires, and the Republican guys are being funded by the kind of more mid-level and old mainstream corporations, and they're not getting along, and as a result, the whole country is suffering. And I think it's just...
Oh, it's completely dysfunctional. I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
I that's why I don't really claim a political party. I have to have more conservative values.
Yeah.
Just one last thing. I heard while I was sitting on the phone, so I didn't really the whole thing, something about the GI Bill.
Yeah.
It was the impression I got, correct my phone, the impression that I got was that you think with a caller, we don't have it anymore?
There is a new GI Bill. There's a new variation on it where if you serve, you get some help, but it's not like the old GI Bill. The old GI Bill that my dad had was incredibly generous.
Yeah. Well, actually, the new I'm still in the Army, so I came in years ago. Under the Montgomery GI Bill, which was pretty good, but the post 9/11 GI Bill, which was converted, which we converted to, is actually probably really generous because it gives you a housing allowance to cover your additional costs, cover your books, and covers your tuition.
That's great. I'm going to have to educate myself about that. Anthony, thanks for the heads up on that. I've heard that. I remember when it was passed, but I need to learn the details. And I'm sorry we're out of time. I can't get them from you, but I will track them down and we'll talk about it in the future. Thanks a lot. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman Program, all the latest news and information from Wall Street to Main Street, everything you need to know to win the water cooler wars. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Here's a couple of easy sites, okay? Free-don.com. Don Siegelman, the last political prisoner in America. PDAmerica.org. MoveToAmend.org. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.